Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tammy Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My husband has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to the John Carver Show. Today, I will be interviewing Ryan McShane. Ryan McShane currently wears three professional hats. He's the Human Resource Officer for the Baltimore County Department of Aging. He's a Human Resources Consultant and Vice President and COO of Mark 3 Solutions. That's over at mark3solutions.com. That's MARC3solutions.com. He's the President of the Chesapeake Human Resource Association, and he's passionate about helping those in career transition and driving organizations to achieve their business potential through a conscious approach to human capital. If you're in a career transition or an organization challenged to address HR issues, you can contact Ryan McShane for some amazing advice. So I'm very excited about talking with Ryan McShane today about conscious capitalism. Hi guys, welcome back to the John Carver Show. I'm here with Ryan McShane, and I met Ryan online 2 years ago or so, and I needed some help with rebranding myself, and Ryan was very kind in offering a lot of advice and wisdom from his experience. But about roughly 3 or 4 months ago, he messaged me about a term that I'd never heard before, and that term is conscious capitalism. I was like, what is conscious capitalism? So I started Googling it and doing some homework on it, and it was a really interesting insight and some really good information. So Ryan and I have talked, and I'm here in one of his offices in Towson, Maryland. And Ryan is going to share a bit about what this term is and how it can impact businesses and families and a lot of relationships that you may have in your life. So, Ryan, welcome to the John Carver Show.
Thank you so much, John. What an honor to be here. I really appreciate your inviting me to speak and bring some awareness to this term of conscious capitalism. You know, often when folks say to me, Ryan, I know what you're talking about when you say capitalism, but what is this conscious capitalism element that you're describing? And so what I typically do is compare conscious capitalism to formal capitalism as it exists in the United States today. And so the principal purpose behind capitalism as it exists in the United States today is the pure pursuit of profit. Whereas conscious capitalism, it certainly has that pursuit of profit element to it, but it really takes a look at how we pursue profit and how we approach business. And considering the full complement of all the stakeholders and the full life cycle of business as well. So we start with the four principles of conscious capitalism that really define how it is operationalized. And very first is higher purpose. And that higher purpose really speaks to either the vision or the mission of the organization or what we all recognize collectively we are here to do. And so when how you might experience this particular concept in the workforce or even in your family lives, in the workforce, it's easy to provide an example. People have different agendas versus what the organizational mission or vision is. And so that's analogous to having people swimming in different directions. And as a result of that, you obviously create inefficiencies, employee relations issues, ego difficulties, power plays, and a lot of manipulation in order for that those competing agendas to eventually win out on top. Whereas with a higher purpose, organizations are looking for everyone to realize the collective shared goal and higher purpose and be aligned with that and not create those individual agendas. And then if we move on to stakeholder orientation. Stakeholder orientation really speaks to the full employment life cycle, and what it basically does is it compares how conscious capitalism and capitalism see stakeholders very differently. The typical stakeholder in a capitalism environment is very simply just the shareholder. And so it's common to hear instances of, well, we need to increase shareholder value, so we're going to eliminate a whole level of management. Well, obviously that was a detriment to that level of management. It could potentially be a detriment to the customers by not having that continuity and quality of service by removing that level of management. So there's a cost and there's a detriment, whereas stakeholder orientation tries to balance every decision made in benefit of all the stakeholders. And so let's define those stakeholders. They are not only your shareholder, but they're your employees. They're your clients and customers that you serve. They're your vendors that provide you the products. And they're the community in which you live and serve as well. And so you certainly don't want to be a detriment to the community in which you operate. Those are the kind of elements that are included in that stakeholder orientation. Obviously, that is a much more beneficial model than only focusing on the shareholder. Our collective performance really rises when you consider the entire stakeholder model. Let's take, for example, the servant leadership model that Robert Greenleaf purports and is really accredited for developing. And basically what that model talks about is the leader is there to equip all the followers to have their capabilities enabled, given the products and the resources so that they can function at the highest level possible. And so the servant leader mentality and model is the leader is there to serve the followers to make sure that they are enabling their greatest capabilities. Very similar to the stakeholder orientation. You need to consider that with your employees. If you don't look at your employees as a potential stakeholder, then they're a disposable commodity. And when that takes place, it's recognized. It's recognized in how people treat one another. It's recognized in the behaviors that exist within the organization, and will ultimately leak out to how we serve the clients and customers and the community as well. So recognizing that the stakeholder goes well beyond just the shareholder and really is to include the full life cycle of business as well. Now we've got two more elements that really define conscious capitalism, and I'll start with conscious leadership because that really informs conscious culture. So conscious leadership basically says we are going to define ahead of time how we want to lead our organization, how we want future leaders of our organization to behave and react. And I mentioned about the servant leadership model of Robert Greenleaf. That particular model really aspires to the conscious capitalism that we're talking about. And recognizing that we can be mindful in the way that we operate. And within that mindfulness, we can assess whether or not we have any kind of detriment that could potentially be exposed to one of our stakeholders. So the conscious leadership is a vital component of this because really, after all, the leadership defines how the organization operates. And that's where we move into conscious culture. And that really speaks to how will we communicate with one another? What kind of values do we operate from within the organization? How do we speak with one another? What are the kind of things that represent the relationships that exist within this organization? Are we continuously building each other up? Or are there competitive agendas underneath the surface that come to the fore, and as a result of that, there's undermining, there's passive aggressiveness, there's backbiting? Those things do not represent the conscious culture or conscious leadership model. And so when we define them up front, we are not necessarily being reactive, but we are being proactive to say, this is how we want to look, this is how we want to operate, and based on what our conscious plan is, that will also feed into how we attract talent within our organization. And that's going to be a critical consideration for businesses to consider. We are right on the precipice of a major labor force change. And you probably recognize it if you're in this category, but the baby boomers, 78 million strong, are currently in the process of considering retirement. Now, they're going to redefine retirement. And it's not going to be hang up the cleats or hang up the a calculator type of thing and sit on the rocking porch. It's not going to be that whatsoever. It's going to be a redefinition of, I've done this for 30, 40, 60 hours a week. I don't want to work in that same capacity, but I do want to stay engaged. So let's see what I really want to do and how I want to contribute. And so the boomers are going to be calling their shot, so to speak, in their encore career. I'd like to call it an encore career, a term that was developed by Mark Friedman and his group, Civic Engagement. So with that advent, a lot of folks are going to be exiting the workforce at the senior and leadership levels, the boomers. And we just do not have the sheer numbers to replace all those vacated positions by the subsequent generation of Generation X. There's 78 million strong in the boomers. There's 36 million strong in the Gen X. Now, the saving grace of this is that we have 77 million coming in the millennial generation. However, they're coming right out of school. They're a younger group. They don't have the experience that the Gen X and boomers do. And obviously with that would be leadership. They don't have that experience of leadership as well. So we're going to experience a period of time where we need to scale up our workforce greatly in terms of their leadership models, their values, how they operate within the workforce, and how we attract talent to our workforce as well. These are going to be some key challenges for human resources professionals and the C-suite of businesses. I want to step back for a moment before I continue with the business aspect of conscious capitalism, and also state that this model can also be something that can be applied to families. Okay, that family unit is a team as much as an organization is a team. And from that standpoint, recognizing, understanding, and unilaterally believing in a higher purpose from which that family operates will best serve that family. Again, having alignment across the entire group will be beneficial. So all the fish are swimming in the same direction, so to speak. That stakeholder orientation, think about how we discussed having that applied to all facets of business life cycle. It can also be exposed to the family team structure and dynamic, and ensuring that, okay, the stakeholder, who is the stakeholder in the family? Well, it could be all the family members. It could be anything in support of the growth of those family members, their community, volunteer activities, education, staying engaged in recreational activities, as well as potential for social entrepreneurship. And that social entrepreneurship is something that typically evolves out of volunteerism, whereby there's recognition of a social need or a community-based need, And when skills align with that, then typically that social entrepreneurship leaves the volunteer capacity and moves into either a nonprofit or an LLC capacity, in which case that they can be leverage resources to have an even bigger impact on the community in which they live and serve. So I'm really excited about how these principles, if you look at each one of them, how they are complementary of one another. They feed into one another, and it's important to note that if any one element of these four principles is missing, it can have a detrimental impact further within the organization and will create further stress and frustration. Now, certainly not as much as if there is no shared vision, if there is no shared sense of value structure within the organization, but consider the stakeholder orientation. If the employer, in this case, forgets that the employee is a very critical stakeholder, that can certainly have a great deal of impact. And it would certainly carry the message in the tone and the behavior and the relationship between the employer and the employee. Again, it would not be a servant leadership model. It would be more like a command and control model that would exist in that environment. Now, I think it's important to talk about command and control versus a servant leadership model, because they're truly opposite in nature. However, they still both exist to a great extent, and I might argue that command and control still exists to a larger extent than does the servant leadership model. Command and control is a traditional leadership model predicated on large organizations and how they are going to be orchestrated. You see this model in public sector, in the military, and large organizations where they typically have a lot of numbers to deal with, and they need a great deal of formality and standardization to operate with those large numbers. Understandably, that does create some efficiencies for those organizations. However, that top-down command and control, you have to pay your dues mentality is lost on the millennial generation. This is a group that says, I want to have an impact immediately. I want to be seen as an equal peer. I want to be someone who can access all the different types of resources within your organization so that I can learn as much as I can on my own, as well as being guided by you. This is a group that is technically savvy beyond measure, and as a result of it, they have a lot of skills to bear for the organization. Where organizations are traditional in nature, the millennials will not be attracted to that because of the level of structure, the level of constraint in terms of exercising their skills and their passion exists more in that traditional model. Whereas the servant leadership model primarily positions that person to live from their strengths and operate from their strengths. So it's really kind of neat to see the two different models and see how each one of them affects their employees, and then ultimately the carrying out of the mission in the organization. You know, I can give you a very simple and recognizable example of those kind of climates and culture. Let's take Starbucks, for example, and compare them to Dunkin' Donuts. Now, I have no favor of one or the other. However, I do recognize a different sense when I purchase either's product, okay? When I walk into a Starbucks, immediately I have a friendly atmosphere. The person immediately addresses me when I walk in, at least says hello, and asks to take my order. Smiles all around, politeness all around, and looking for opportunities to go above and beyond and ensure that customer is having a great experience from that exchange. Whereas folks that do not operate from those principles, it is much more transactional, that experience. So where organizations are focusing on the creating pleasant, positive, and proactive experiences, those who are merely interested in transaction will not have those levels of services in place, and therefore will be beat out by those competitors that have that level of service focus and stakeholder orientation. So if you want to look at it from a hard number standpoint, over the last 10 years, the 10 companies that participated in the conscious capitalism principles and operational approach were compared to the S&P 500 earnings over the last 10 years. And those that operated from conscious capitalism principles exceeded the S&P 500 in revenue in terms of 1,025% of earnings. So where you think I might be getting ready to say we're going to get in a circle and hold hands and sing Kumbaya, there's actually a real hard benefit, a very practical dollars and cents aspect of what we're talking about in terms of conscious capitalism. It raises the bar for all folks that are a part of that relationship. And that only benefits everyone involved. And I think that's really exciting to see. Being that I grew up in a generation where we saw exhibits of bad employee behavior, you know, for lack of a better term, you have scandals such as Enron, such as Bernie Madoff. You have the recent Volkswagen scandal where they submitted false information in regards to their emissions testing. All of that, all of those examples have been manipulation for the pure pursuit of profit. So it all comes down to greed. In the conscious capitalism model, what we do is we have fail-safes in place by having those four principles to operate from. And if it's serving as a detriment to any one of those stakeholders, and obviously given the Volkswagen case, what they wanted to do was say, okay, the emissions aren't as bad as what you might expect. So they purported false information, leading consumers to believe that they're doing something good for the environment by purchasing these vehicles, only to later find out that that information was manipulated, and therefore they may not be doing so good for the environment in terms of the emissions that they're putting off from operating their car. And so that's pure manipulation, purely pulling the wool over the eyes of the stakeholder, and certainly upsetting for anyone who has been duped by Volkswagen as a result of that. So you can clearly see the comparative between the two. I'll give you another comparative of those that operate from conscious capitalism. Container Store is one of those. Now, if you're not familiar with Container Store, it is as it sounds. This organization sells containers, boxes of all kinds. And you wouldn't think, how exciting can that be? However, their model, what they decided in terms of how they're going to operate, has continued to serve them very, very well, being a leading contender in their industry, as well as continuously being voted one of the top organizations to work for. And when you're thinking about marketing yourself for great talent, you can't get better than being voted one of the top places to work for. And you're going to continuously see that both conscious capitalism organizations are great places to work, as well as they're have great revenue for the business and enabling them to stay viable and continue to have a positive impact for those around them.
Questions for you. A few questions. What if you have a situation where you have an employee or employees that are stuck in an environment, a job, and their managers, the corporate CEOs, or anybody above their tier, doesn't abide by what you just talked about, and they're maybe low man on the totem pole or maybe middle man on the totem pole, what, if anything, can that person do to influence the culture in that environment?
Yeah, great question. Certainly, I would always recommend that folks behave from the standpoint of how they would want to be treated in that instance. Certainly, frustrations can occur in terms of perceptions and how an individual believes that they're being treated. And all too often, I see people react from a place of fear. And really, we need to make sure that we're responding from a place of love in terms of how do we want to be treated, and explaining that in a compassionate way. Also explaining what could be the potential detrimental impact of operating in the opposite tact. I like to approach things from an educational standpoint. So in those cases, it benefits us to sit down with the stakeholders involved, the players involved, employee and manager, and talk about what kind of behaviors would they like to see happen. How best can they operate with one another to bring out the best in one another? Those are certainly critical conversations and sometimes difficult conversations to have, but they really speak to the heart of how we are going to treat one another and operate with one another. And it's oftentimes considering what's in it for me, the old WIFM analogy. So if we can articulate and design something that really speaks to what's in it for the manager to shift their approach, as well as what's in it for the employee to shift their approach to greater resemble the conscious capitalism model. In so doing, you're starting to create models and examples within the organization that you can continually hold up and recognize for others to repeat that same type of behavior.
So what I'm hearing you say is that the person that's not in charge can kind of sort of create an environment in the culture that could, in fact, create waves upline, for the lack of a better term, to impact those that are running the firm. Is that fair to say?
You know, I think you can. There is a concept called leading up or managing up, and I'm a big fan, and I would always advocate that people operate from that standpoint. At the same token, I will say that it won't be without its challenges. The culture of an organization is predicated based on the leaders at the very top. Okay, they call the shot, so to speak. They claim the rules and the policies and procedures. And so where they are disparate in terms of their treatment of persons outside of these principles of conscious capitalism, there's not a whole lot that can be done within the organization. However, I will attest that it won't be long before that ricochets and comes back to be a detriment for that organization. If not in terms of being able to attract talent to that organization, it could have an impact on the clientele that's being served or the customers that are being served because of the fact we're not getting the greatest talent because the culture is not conducive to that. That could obviously impact how our skills are leveraged to serve those that we serve. So there's always a cost associated with leadership. And, you know, that cost, it's either a cost or benefit model. So if you're going to leverage the resources that you have to operate at maximum capacity, that's certainly the benefit. However, if we're limiting capabilities, limiting skill sets, and limiting leadership through the command and control model, then we're really doing ourselves a disservice. And I kind of liken it to having a color copier, but only being willing to push the black and white copy button. You're missing out on a whole level of capability that you would have at your fingertips if only you chose to operate from that standpoint.
Now, I didn't prep you for this, so I want to throw you a slight curveball.
Okay.
Let's jump to a parallel road.
Okay.
How can a parent or parents use these same concepts to create an environment in their home where their kids are in a public school environment and the kids may be threatened or they're immersed in a culture that is the complete opposite of what we're talking about here today?
Mm-hmm.
How do you think a parent can set a tone, set an atmosphere, create an environment for the student or for the child to behave in a way that mirrors what we're just talking about versus the dog-eat-dog attitude that's out there in the culture these days?
Great question, John. And I really think it comes back to trust. And what I'm talking about is that servant leadership. The family structure, the family unit, the parents of the child in the family, they're really in a great position to make sure that the individual or follower in this case is well supported. There's a great deal of support that's recognized and felt. You know, it comes down to the simple fact, if you don't show the person that they care, that you care for them, it doesn't matter what you say or do. Okay, so it comes down to, and this is for employers as well, for with employees, all you have to do at the foundation of this is demonstrate care and compassion and trust for that individual. From then on, that person can hear what you have to say because you've tapped into and overcome the barrier of agendas and egos. Just demonstrating that you are there to support that individual and make sure that they're as successful as possible is half the battle. From that standpoint, being consistent. Being consistent with the compassion, understanding of what that person is challenged with, and then also tapping into the other environments in which that person is exposed that may not be consistent with the conscious capitalism environment. For example, schools. You know, once the students leave the home, you know, we can't have a whole lot of control over the school environment and what they're exposed to. And, you know, I oftentimes hear it said from my son, you know, if they hear a curse word on TV or something like that, they'll give me a look, and or I'll give them a look, and they say, oh, don't worry, Dad, I hear it in school all the time. And not that that makes it any better, but that it definitely gives you an example of the kind of varying culture that they're exposed to in school. So I think it's important to have conversations with teachers as well, the faculty, administration, guidance counselors, all need to be attuned to any challenges or struggles that individual student is experiencing at the time. Therefore, they can be in a position to observe it and further support that individual. If you're having an experience where a student's being picked on in their classroom, then certainly the teacher would be well positioned to have awareness of that and try to avoid that from happening. Same with the guidance counselor and administrator, for that matter. Guidance counselor would also be a great resource in terms of that individual exploring their passions, exploring their skill sets, and exploring their values. It's never too early to consider what you want to do with your life. And when I say what you want to do with your life, I'm not talking just occupationally. I really look at this more of a personal mission standpoint. So if you're not leveraging your passions, if you're not considering what really makes your heart sing and operate and it leverages the strength that you have, then you're really doing yourself a disservice. All too often, working in the career transition capacity with some of my clients, I hear the term should a lot. And so we all can have a tendency to should all over ourselves and say, you know, I should do this, I should do that. And oftentimes what we need to recognize, those shoulds likely come from a place of fear. And therefore, we need to really examine why is it that we feel this should nature? What's behind that? What's driving that? Are our shoulds really feeding us, or are they taking us further away from our true alignment of strengths and abilities? So anytime that term should starts coming up in your mind, that's a good time to pause and really consider, is this in my best interest? And start replacing that with want. I feel that I would want to be in a capacity to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And I'll I'll even expand that and say, after you've defined your want, then it comes down to have to. And that have to is really an incredible place to be. It is, once we have the realization of what our personal calling is, if you will, what our passions are, what our great awareness of what our skills are, and recognition that these thoughts, these goals that I have in mind, they haven't gone away. They continue to resurface almost on a daily basis. And that's when you know you have to follow your passion, you have to follow your ideals in terms of what you want to do next. That could be occupational, it could be voluntary, it could be something in a whole different scope. But it's that have to state where you know you're firing on all cylinders and likely to be in a flow state. You're operating from bliss, you're operating from your highest levels, and therefore you're going to have the greatest impact for those that you're serving in that moment.
Can integrity be taught? Can integrity be taught? Because you and I have seen people in a variety of lines of work.
Mm-hmm.
And really, depending on where the person comes from, their history, their home life,
mm-hmm.
Their culture, meaning their environment, oftentimes integrity is not a priority.
Right.
Can integrity be taught? And B, do you know what kind of people that may embrace integrity? Because integrity is really the foundation of what
yep.
we've been talking about here.
Good point, John. Yeah, I believe it can be taught. And the reason I say that is what it comes down to is an understanding of certain principles and uniform recognition of these principles will guide how we behave with one another and buy into those principles. And I think it's those that are open to that kind of environment have likely experienced the other side of integrity. What I mean by that is they may have been proverbially stabbed in the back by a colleague or a coworker or a supervisor or a subordinate. And so they've experienced what it's like to be lacking integrity or experience others treating them from a lack of integrity. I think that everyone wants to be treated in a certain way, but all too often, individual agendas, power plays, political power plays, egos, and greed oftentimes compromise that integrity. So, for example, I go back to the scandals, corporate scandals that exist. You know, I guarantee you that many of the administration that were in the Enron debacle would have told you, oh, yes, I'm very integral. I have a great deal of integrity. They probably had core values that the organization said that they operated from. Okay, that's where you're going to get the superficial lip service. And you're going to recognize the disparity between how people behave and operate and what they really verbalize. I agree with you 100% that integrity is the foundation of it, and believe that to the extent people are held accountable to that integrity, we can encourage folks to operate from that standpoint.
Now, here comes another curveball. With that same mindset, I've heard and I've thought my own self when I've been challenged to do the right thing or the wrong thing, is the term that good guys finish last. So, you know, if you're a good guy and you serve other people and mm-hmm. if you put everybody else in front of you, which is how we should do, normally, at least in some people's minds, that you don't get ahead as fast as those mm-hmm. who cut people's throats, who stab people in the back. What do you say about the philosophy that all good guys finish last? Is that really true?
Well, and there's also another saying that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with others.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that speaks to what we're talking about here. Because I think where we have those individualized agendas, we are going to encounter more conflict. Because likely we're not incorporating people into that agenda or incorporating buy-in. We're just going headlong into our agenda, I will accomplish, and everything around that person is seen as a competition. Okay, so if we're operating from that standpoint, a competitive standpoint, then it's obviously not getting the buy-in, the stakeholder commitment that would be taking the latter standpoint of the servant leadership model. The more buy-in you get, the more power of influence you get by having more numbers of people behind you, which can coerce the behavior that you're trying to create in that team or within that organization.
This has been very, very interesting, a very, very deep conversation. I want to switch gears again while
sure.
I'm joining you now. I'll go back to what we talked about in the beginning. As we met online,
yep.
You helped me quite a bit and got my mind to really expand in a few different areas.
Fantastic.
But talk to me about what you do for other people, for your clients over at mark3solutions.com.
Sure.
What do you do? How do you do it? How do you get there? What have you done for other folks? I really want to give you an opportunity to let those who listen to the show know how you can help them.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. Just a little bit of background. I've been in human resources for 20 plus years now. And I started my career with the federal government and then went to work in the .com. And then after that, I worked for a large nonprofit. And then I worked in long-term care after that. And it was through working in long-term care that I identified I really like a service-based organization. And when I worked in long-term care, I found that type of organization where the folks really walked the talk. The core values weren't just a plaque on the wall. People actually lived them, breathed them, and behaved from those core values. And then I had experienced a downsizing in my career as a result of a new CFO coming in, and they're charged to find money, and they saw HR as a cost center, and so the HR unit was downsized. And that's when I came to work for the county, thinking public sector might offer a little more security. However, what I experienced was I was well-equipped to do the job. I was had great advocacy by my leader at the time, who said, "Ryan, I love what you do. Run with it. Carry it. And move forward." However, since then, there's been a different approach and different leadership model that's been enacted. And so I wanted to continue to see and look for opportunities to have an impact. I felt like my impact was limited in my formal day-to-day role. And so on a whim, about 5 years ago, I put it out on through social media that I'd be happy to help anyone in career transition. And I had already been writing resumes for friends and colleagues for a number of years, and I thought, well, you know what, let me put it out on a greater scale, and if I can help more people, that would be phenomenal. And lo and behold, John, I was inundated. It was very fortunate that for me and for the opportunity to benefit others, I had a lot of people calling me, and before I knew it, I was doing a lot of business based on referrals. Happy clients, happy customers saying, "Hey, check out Ryan and his resumes, and he can help you too." And so that's what I've been doing over the last 5 years. And then two years ago, I decided that I want to ramp that up a little bit more and continue to expand the services that I provide in terms of the HR consultation arena. And so not only do I now provide career transition support for folks in the need, but I also provide leadership development and pre-hire personality-based assessments. And the leadership development, the reason I invested myself in really exploring and equipping myself with the skills to proliferate leadership development in others was from the standpoint that I recognize the huge impact that leadership can have. But the high-performance leadership model that we offer to our clients really speaks to this conscious leadership. and really speaks to creating the type of organization that can not only be a great talent attractor, but can also have a great impact for the community and the business environment and economy as well. So I've had a ball being able to get certified in high-performance leadership. And then the personality-based assessments really became a priority, recognizing that 85% of job placements are still made based on personality, are still made based on personal connection with that individual. You know, it's kind of interesting to me that, you know, 75% of job placements are made through people you know, and then 85% of job placements are made based on the personality connection.
Repeat that again.
Okay. 75% of job placements are made based on who you know. So it goes back to, it does matter who you know, okay, and certainly what you know to an extent. But that collaboration, that connection, that networking is vitally important for anyone in career transition. Okay, so I say that to say, consider that fact. Consider also the fact that once you have that interview, that group of interview candidates, 85% of the time, they will be selected based on the personal connection that is made between them and the decision maker or the hiring manager. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I'm saying by that is it's not necessarily a hard or technical skill set that differentiates that individual. Mm-hmm. It is oftentimes the interpersonal skills that differentiate that person. And once you're basically, it comes down to what kind of people do you want to work with? Do you want to work with people that are collaborative, that are congenial, that don't have any particular agendas, that really are there for the same purpose you are, and will be conducive to the productivity of the entire team? Those are the kinds of things that you want to be thinking about in terms of that environment.
So this is taught in a one-on-one environment. Is it done in like a conference that you do? How specifically are you able to coach
great question.
People in job transition? Mm-hmm. What formats do you use?
So for the career transitions support services that I provide, it's typically one-on-one. So it's real high touch. We're sitting knee to knee oftentimes, or on the phone if there's a great deal of distance between us. And we're talking about what are their dreams, what are their goals. I do an values inventory, a strengths inventory, and a personality inventory with them. Collectively, the information will kind of define where that person is best suited. Then we talk about how does that measure up with what you desire? How does that measure up with what you recognize about yourself currently? And we talk about their job experiences up to that point. And we really define a focus and target area. And then we position the person to bring out the skill sets as well as the competencies that support that target or focused area. So it's very much career marketing is what we're doing. So we're making sure the resume supports that messaging. We're making sure that the LinkedIn profile supports that messaging, and we're also equipping the individual to feel very comfortable that when they get that interview, they're going in and they're marketing themselves in an appropriate manner as well. So with the career transition, it's one-on-one. With the leadership development, we are oftentimes called within two organizations to provide presentations on myriad of leadership topics. There's 12 different modules of high-performance leadership that we can speak to, ranging from emotional intelligence to powers of persuasion to the trust factor and many more. So we'll even hold standalone trainings for those events as well. And some more information will be coming out about those standalone trainings for anyone interested, and I'll be happy to pass those that information along to John for advertising as well. And now for the personality-based assessments, pre-employment hiring, as I mentioned before, with so much of the hiring predicated on personality and how that person fits within the organizational culture, what can be done is we can set up benchmarks based on the rock stars within your organization, within a particular function, and determine that candidates need to match that rock star profile very similarly to demonstrate that they have the kind of personality fit that is successful within that culture and within that job function. And so it saves a great deal of time for the person that's screening all the possible candidates. We're not conducting umpteen interviews with candidates that aren't a good fit. And so that's going to save the organization a great deal of money by using these benchmarks, by using the personality-based assessments. And then they can also be leveraged for performance management capabilities, whereby you can compare that person's performance to the model that's been described within the benchmark. And you can also use it for succession planning purposes. Once you have instituted knowledge management capabilities by defining the job role and the who, what, when, where, and why of how to accomplish each major duty within the job, then you have at least the explicit knowledge captured that can be passed along to the next incumbent so that they can pick up that document and see and get a sense of how they are to perform that job. The implicit information is a little harder to capture. And really comes down to how that person viewed the job and saw their role, and how we when we can capture that implicit information, it's best done through a mentor-mentee relationship. So where job redesign comes in handy is just that. You've got a retiree or someone who's maybe 6 months out from retirement. Now's a good time for them to wrap up all their projects. Now's a good time for them to look at their unit, determine are we still in alignment with the overall agency mission and goals, and also consider a successor. And I know that oftentimes that can, just even the terminology of having a successor or succession planning can strike the fear in folks that are uncomfortable that they may lose their job to that mentee or the person that's succeeding them or could potentially succeed them. So what you often have in that environment is knowledge is power, and they're going to guard it with their life. And so what we need to do is create the culture, create the environment to be as transparent as possible. No punches being pulled. We're all in it for the betterment of those that we're serving. And so it's definitely in the benefit of the organization and the team that the director or manager pass along their institutional knowledge to anyone who could leverage that same institutional knowledge. And the organization, quite frankly, has to be very transparent with the individual that would be succeeded in this case and let them know that they're vital in making sure that that organization succeeds long well after they're gone by creation of institutional knowledge or passing along of that institutional knowledge. So I think that's really important and something for the C-suite to continue to keep in mind. You know, it was not too long ago that I read where only 45% of corporate entities have any kind of formal succession planning in place. And quite frankly, that concerns me to a great extent. And it should concern those organizations. Again, for all the reasons that we talked about in terms of the impending baby boomer turnover, the fact that there's not going to be a lot of people to carry on that institutional knowledge, and there's going to be a lot of new faces and new talent coming into the organization. So where there's gaps of institutional knowledge, people were left to recreate that and therefore could divert the organization in terms of its alignment to its overall mission.
Next question.
Please.
Most people that I have run across over the years, they are very passive in their job hunt.
Mm-hmm.
They put out 1,000 resumes, 500 resumes, 12 resumes, whatever the numbers are, and they hope and pray and, you know, light candles and
right.
You know, Hail Marys and do all the other stuff that they do.
You're right.
Their fingers and toes and hoping that somebody's going to see them and are interested in them. In my experience, that's very uncommon.
Yes.
So you said earlier that a large percentage of hirees or hires are happen as a result of people who know of people.
Yeah, 75% in fact.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So how do you through your company get the potential hires in the faces of the employers that are looking for good talent?
Great question. So post and pray, that whole concept is long gone. And really it comes down to networking. So I had mentioned that not only does the individual need a quality resume that's going to be attractive and differentiate them in terms of their competition, but they also need that LinkedIn social media presence. By so doing, they can also, by the capabilities of the LinkedIn software, one can look up the companies that they may be interested in working for and determine whether or not, and see a listing of the employees in that company and determine whether or not they might already have a friend or a colleague that works for that organization. That would enable them to get a warm introduction to the hiring managers or the human resources professionals or even the C-suite so that that person can get their name known and recognized. So it's that networking that's really vital. Component of that. Not only through social media, I would highly encourage you to attend events that are within your industry, attend training programs that are within your industry, and look for also volunteer opportunities that are within your industry. I know very, very clearly I recall making several hires within the organization that I currently represent on a full-time basis, based on the fact that the volunteers were a known commodity. They were a recognized entity. We knew based on their volunteerism that they were committed, that they were passionate, that they had a great deal of skill sets. And then when it came time to fill a vacancy, they were well positioned to step into that role. So volunteerism can oftentimes lead to employment as well. So I would strongly encourage people to get active in terms of their exposure to the kind of organizations that they want to work for. Informational interviews are also a very good tactic. What I mean by an informational interview is reaching out to someone within the organization, letting them know who you are, and inquiring as to whether or not you could bend their ear, talk to them for maybe 15, 20 minutes, about what they do in the organization and a little bit more about the services of the organization. In that way, the individual is not put on the spot to feel like there's an ask of them in terms of interview or in terms of offer of a job, but they're given the opportunity to talk about something that they like, enjoy, and know a great deal about. So it really honors them to ask them about their organization. And the individual also has a no-stress environment in which to be very candid in terms of any questions that they might have and why someone would want to work for that organization. So I'm a big fan of informational interviews as well.
Last question. How can people get a hold of you to look up what you do, to contact you, to hire you to help them recreate and rebrand themselves?
Fantastic. I'm glad you asked the question. So I have a few different ways to contact me. I want to give you my email. It's Ryan, R-Y-A-N, M as in McShane, at Mark 3, and Mark is spelled M-A-R-C 3, Solutions, SLOUTIONS.com. So it's Ryan M. at mark3solutions.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn under Ryan McShane. And in addition to that, we also have a website that I would encourage you to go out to and check out our products and offerings there as well. And that is www.mark3solutions.com.
Ryan, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. I've learned a lot. I've relearned a lot. And I hope everybody who's going to play the show will also leverage all of your information. Thanks so much.
It was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you, John.
I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For Over the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.